This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Vanity Fair.
Hello and welcome to our post-Oscars episode of Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I know I have to wrap up, but I really just want to thank my family, my mom, my brother, Spencer, my dad, my husband, Dave. I love you so much. And most importantly, my daughter, who's going to be 3 in 3 days and has turned our lives technicolor. I love you bigger than the whole sky, my girl. So thank you so much. Don't look at the back of my dress.
I felt so much joy making this movie, and I want other people to experience that joy, and they are out there, I promise you. The next Martin Scorsese is out there, the next Greta's out there, both Gretas, the next Christopher Nolan's out there, I promise you. They just want a shot, and we can give them one, and this has changed my life. Thank you all who worked on this movie for trusting a 40-year-old black guy who'd never directed anything before. It has changed my life. Thank you. I love you all. Thank you so much.
I am so grateful to all you beautiful people out here. For so long, I've always wanted to be different. And now I realize I just need to be myself. And I thank you. I thank you for seeing me. Ron Van Loo, I thank you. When I was the only black girl in that class, when you saw me and you told me I was enough, and when I told you I don't see myself, you said, that's fine. We're gonna forge our own path. You're gonna lay a trail for yourself.
I am Katie Rich. I am here bright and early with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
With David Canfield.
Hello.
And with Kara Warner.
Hello.
As you might be able to hear from our voices, Richard and I are not on the West Coast, so we're maybe a little bit better rested than we would be otherwise. But David and Kara, you guys went from the Oscars directly to the Vanity Fair Oscar party. So how are you doing this morning?
Pretty well. Pretty well. I actually thought my voice is going to be a lot more gone. So,
hey,
we braved it.
We'll take the small victories. So we're here to talk about the Oscars and the Vanity Fair Oscar party and everything else in between. We want to start by congratulating the winner of our inaugural Little Gold Men Oscar pool. Jessica Sladen got all but one category correct. That's right. She disregarded our advice, predicted Emma Stone to win Best Actress, and reaped the rewards. We are already in touch with Jessica. She will get to pick some upcoming topics of discussion on this show as her prize. And thank you again to everyone who participated. It was really fun. I knew I would not win. I think I did worse than expected, which is usually what happens. And yeah, we hope we get to do it again next year.
I was watching the kind of live leaderboard throughout the night, and there were three people who were like on top for the whole evening, hadn't gotten one right, wrong rather. And then Emma Stone won, and they just dropped out of sight, and then and then Sladen came and slayed.
Reigned supreme, yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I think we really should probably start by talking about Best Actress. It broke tradition in the format of the show. It was the second to last award announced, I think, because, you know, I don't know if they assumed Lily Gladstone would win and make history. It wasn't quite a Chadwick Boseman situation. I think there was certainly more suspense there than there was for Best Director. And as I said, we all eventually predicted Lily Gladstone, and we were all eventually wrong, although the minute Emma Stone won, I was like, oh yeah, that does make perfect sense.
Yeah, when Poor Things, you know, won all those design categories, something in my brain started to turn. I was like, they really do seem to like that movie. I mean, I thought they were going to win those design categories, but I just hadn't put two and two together about what that would mean for actress. But yeah, in hindsight, it does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that was the big open question, was how well Poor Things would do, because it impacted so many of the close races. And so I think the first one was Makeup, right? That it won, yeah. Which was considered pretty 50-50 with Maestro going in. And once the movie won that, I was basically like, Emma Stone is winning. Because it just, to me, that was the level of support you would think that it needed. And they're all voting on the same awards, right? And it kept beating out other movies in close races. So it was logical that it would do that in the big one.
I kept thinking they were, you know, distributing votes evenly and the craft categories were going to win Poor Things when possibly Lily would win Best Actress. But I was not surprised.
Yeah, I think that's spreading the wealth. Like, it's not like it was just, you know, Oppenheimer only won seven. So it wasn't like there was some giant sweep. They did spread the wealth in some way. But I don't think we saw that logic of like, well, I voted for it here, so I guess I should give someone else this. You know, that's how Cillian Murphy wins. So, you know, they kind of stuck with the things that they liked and the spots where those things really shone, which I think Poor Things did in all of those crafts categories and for Emma Stone.
Yep.
I thought her speech was great. I mean, the broken dress was kind of a great viral moment, but she just seemed so genuinely surprised and overwhelmed and kind of this sense of, you know, not that she'd taken anything away from anybody, but that, you know, her category was really strong. I don't really have a problem with it. I wanted Lily Gladstone to win like so many other people did, but that's one hell of a performance. And she's a major star who could make movies like this possible and deserves to be rewarded for it.
Yeah. I mean, the look on her face when they called her name was a bit stricken, you know, people were like, well, my partner was like, I think it's just because she realized her dress broke. And I was like, no, I think it's about a little bit more than that. But then she gathered herself. And I think, you know, like, she really went out on the limb for this movie, you know, in a lot of ways. It was a huge risk, you know, in terms of the style of performance and what she's asked to do in the film. And I think that, like, hopefully that came rushing back into her head when she got on stage and was like, wait, I did like work really hard at this. And it is exciting that people seem to have responded so well to it. You know, obviously it was kind of a fraught thing. And, you know, Twitter was being, Twitter about it. And you know, it's complicated in that I'm sad for some people and I'm happy for other people. And it's just kind of how the Oscars work. Like that Gladstone and Hüller, who were nominated at all, is an achievement in itself. So that's hopefully they're all happy enough.
Yeah. It is just amazing that she won. I mean, given everything, given where the narrative was, where I think a lot of sentiment was, the fact that they really were able to keep her in at the center of that conversation for so long, I think it's just a testament to the performance. I think I called it, you know, there's an undeniability to it that I think carried her through because this was a really tight race.
I feel like it's a really similar thing, not to move away from Best Actress too quickly, but with Cillian Murphy. You know, I think Paul Giamatti is someone, again, who I'd been rooting for so much, who had so much goodwill and narrative behind him. But that performance at the center of that movie going into that night was undeniable, just like what you said for Emma Stone. Like, it's not like we're seeing people we like Paul Giamatti and Lily Gladstone lose to performances I won't name from years past that didn't seem very worthy. These are just huge totemic things. And I think even if you are disappointed with maybe your specific favorite not winning, I think it's really hard to quibble with the choices that they actually made.
Yeah.
Yeah. One could say I'm a bit more here in Bohemia. I'm a bit more rhapsodic about these wins
oh my goodness.
Than I have been about past winners I won't name.
To go back to those Poor Things craft wins, not to get too in the weeds too quickly, but that might be my biggest just personal disappointment of the night was Barbie missing out on both costumes and production design. And we talked at length about those two categories specifically and how it came down to those two movies. And I was really hoping Barbie would pull out costumes for, as I said, like these really iconic looks. I wanted it to get some reward for that exceptional craft. And I would not have minded Poor Things sharing with it there specifically.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I think you and I agreed both on those, trying to debate production design and costume. It did feel like the tide had turned or had just never come back toward Barbie, especially because we talked about, you know, the costumes, modern costumes don't win, sadly, which is such a bummer. And I was definitely hoping when production design, I'm like, this might be their only other chance.
Yeah.
Alas.
But do we think that Barbie won the night anyway because of I'm Just Ken?
Yes.
Good. David, right, tell us about witnessing that in person, please. Yeah.
It was an experience. It was a sing-along. You had the lyrics on all walls, and you could see people in my section just like really excitedly looking to the lyrics so they could sing very loudly along with Ryan Gosling. It was an amazing live performance. I don't know what else there is to say. It was just unbelievable. And it was exactly what it should be. I mean, I thought it was funny that not so long ago, there was all this, you know, question as to whether Ryan Gosling would be on the show at all, whether he would perform it.
Never bought into that being a question.
But there were people like on social media who would say, he doesn't need to do that. He's not going to do that.
I mean, he didn't perform for La La Land, which I'd been trying to see if it was
and that
like,
was something that was, you know, said a lot in support of that claim.
Yeah. I was just trying to look up. It was like, okay, Ryan Gosling performs, Emma Stone wins Best Actress, something weird happens with the Best Picture presentation. It all lines back up.
Right.
But he hadn't performed.
And he won the day. Like, I was on the carpet from quite early, and he got the loudest reaction by far. And he just completely leaned into it. You know, he went up to the fans and the stands and he took his selfies and he did the Ken bit. It was a delight. And it was really lovely to see him kind of give that back in a way after particularly that part of the movie became such a phenomenon.
I know this is a silly thing to say about someone who's been nominated for multiple Oscars and been the lead of big blockbuster films, but it kind of felt like Ryan Gosling finally became a movie star, you know, last night, and like, or at least accepted an aspect of movie stardom. You know, like, I think he has said in interviews that, like, for Barbie, he was like, you know what, like, maybe it is time to stop, like, ignoring the Mickey Mouse Club part of me, you know, and you know, because a lot of his movies are brooding and he's very taciturn in them. And this is just like, it just felt like true to the movie, like accepting the fullness of himself. And it paid off handsomely. And I mean handsomely.
It was that shot of him when he's crowd surfing. And, you know, I think the way that they filmed it was like, I had some quibbles with that. It was kind of hard to spot the other Kens, but there's that moment where they're bringing Slash out and he's laying back with two people holding him. And he's just got his arms behind his head and looks completely relaxed while being carried on the Oscar stage, where I was like, oh, no, he's the only person who can do that. He isn't like in a category of his own.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that also in the context of him not winning the Oscar, which I guess happened before the performance, right? Robert Downey Jr. was before that. But that, again, like we were saying earlier about Lily Gladstone and Paul Giamatti, that's an all-timer, maybe the best performance of Ryan Gosling's entire career that just kind of happened to have not been able to win an Oscar for totally understandable reasons. And we have to live with that.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of places where you could look at Barbie and say, it is absolutely worthy here, and it did not win. And I think he was really one of those. For many months, it was obviously known he was not going to win. But whenever they played, like, I mean, they didn't have clips at the show, but at other award shows, when they played his clips, of course, it got the loudest reaction. And I feel like there was always a reminder of, like, no, he's really good in this. It's not it wasn't just a meme. Like, this is a great performance. I noticed that happening every time. So I'm glad he stuck it out. And yeah, I completely agree with Richard. He really leaned in and in a way I hadn't seen him do before. And he kind of ran away with the night.
The way that Barbie was incorporated into the night, I think, is what I expected, but also kind of hurt every time. Like, the show opens and closes with Dance the Night, the Dua Lipa song that was not even nominated, very cruelly. Obviously, Jimmy Kimmel talks about Greta Gerwig very early on in his monologue. Like, the show wanted to embrace Barbie. It deserved to be able to embrace Barbie. But then every time Barbie didn't win something, it was just kind of this reminder of that contrast. And I'm over the idea of Barbie being snubbed. I think we can live with it. But I do think in 20 years, you talk to someone who wasn't around for these Oscars, gonna be like, wait a second, Barbie was the biggest movie of the year, and that's all you managed to do for it? And it's just like, yeah, that's how it had to be.
Yeah. I was really happy that Kimmel, I loved his joke where he's like, by the way, they weren't nominated because you guys didn't nominate them. Like, I love that.
Well, only the director's branch is responsible for Greta, not everybody.
But I also do think, though, that we should take a step back and value the perspective of, we're currently talking about how the Barbie movie didn't win enough Oscars. It's a crazy thing that it happened at all, that it was even there, especially in the volume that it was there. You know, so my hope is that, again, kind of similar to the Best Actress race, like, I hope, you know, maybe this is Pollyanna of me, that they're that the people involved with Barbie are like, well, at least we were there and we were seen and recognized and we had our big moments. And, you know, they did win an Oscar. So that's more than certain movies can say. So,
yeah.
When Greta Gerwig finally does win an Oscar, and it will happen, same for Ryan Gosling, same for Paul Giamatti, same for Lily Gladstone. Like, it's going to be a moment. Like, there are Greta being at the top of the heap for me, I think, because she's made just three really huge movies. Her first three movies have gotten all this attention. And they're just going to have to bide their time a little bit longer.
It better be on that Oscar stage and not at the Governor's Awards.
Oh, yes.
Really. Dark thought. I mean, man, it better be.
Actually, David, you probably couldn't even see this from inside the room, the way they handled the Governor's Awards this year during the broadcast. Did you catch any of it?
No.
Yeah. So they had Janet Yang standing backstage kind of saying, like, you know, these are the people who won the Governor's Award. You can go online to watch their speeches.
Oh, I did. No, yes, I did see that. Okay. I did see that. Yeah.
But then you have, it's right after Billie Eilish and Phineas won, and you have them like sneaking by her and like not unclear if they know who Janet Yang is. And it was fine. I think the Governor's Awards are always like a tricky thing to handle the way they do it now. But I was thinking about, you know, the 2004 Oscars that we watched a few weeks ago with Blake Edwards and his whole bit with the wheelchair. And it's like, ah, this is what you could have had. And yet you've shoved it immediately before a commercial break.
Especially the names they had this year. I mean, one in particular. With Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see her on the stage, but, you know, it's tough.
I thought that the show last night was mostly, like, well-proportioned and stuff, but, you know, I always go back and forth on whether I want the Oscars to be longer or shorter or how I want them to be sort of staged, but, like, last night did feel a bit skimpy in a way where it's like, you had room for some of this stuff, you know?
I mean, it ran under time.
It ran under time, you know? And I just felt like whether that was the absence of clips or not having, you know, special awards given out on stage, or we didn't have a starlet come out and say, 2 weeks ago, I hosted the Science and Technical Awards, you know? Like, we didn't have a lot of the old bells and whistles, but we did have some of it. And we had dancers at the In Memoriam reel, which felt like, when's the last time that happened? Or when's the last time there were really, you know, modern dance on stage and not in a best song performance, you know? I don't know. I think that like the night felt, it was good, but it also, there could have been more. I think there was room for it.
I mean, Richard, you and I talked to Louis Fertel, and that conversation will air later this week, kind of about the, you know, the way that when they write the show, they take the time constraints into in mind. But I was really surprised when I realized how short the ceremony was. It started an hour early, so it didn't feel the sense of like doom, like it was creeping into the next day. But they played the clips from all 10 of the nominees and really good clip reels. They played clips for the screenplay nominees, I think, that were also really good scenes. They played sound clips, which was amazing.
That was awesome.
What a great reel. And we had those actor presenters with the five. Like, it felt full to me, actually. And I know that there's stuff that you're missing always, but I was amazed at what all they managed to do in a pretty reasonable runtime.
No, I felt that way too. I was very relieved when I noticed how well it was moving, how effectively it was moving. And I found the balance really strong. Once you had the actresses come out to present to Devine Joy Randolph to start the night, I could tell that there was just some shuffling in seats, like, oh, here we go. Which, number one, anyone who thought that even then, you're wrong.
That was maybe the best part of the entire night.
It's incredible. It's why we watch the Oscars in five panels.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once you noticed the kind of groove they were going to get in, I thought it met those anxieties pretty well, where you didn't have anything dragging too long. Probably if you had Wes Anderson and or Miyazaki accepting.
Sure.
That's probably where some of those minutes were lost.
Although those guys both seem like real brief acceptance speech kind of guys. Like, they'd get in and out if they were there.
Yes. But you probably were. I mean, if you're budgeting for like Spider-Verse, sure, whereas a bunch of people, it's a different kind of thing. So, yeah, I actually thought that the show was paced really well. And to me, it's always a matter of, like, how do you build out these musical performances? Because they had this great ability to anchor the broadcast with Barbie, that really stunning performance of What Was I Made For to start and I'm Just Ken to end. And then in the middle, you have, I mean, that was the first time I'd ever heard The Fire Inside. And I will be honest. My reaction was the music branch needs to stop this. Like, this is just a little bit, it was a little silly. And that was definitely the reaction of everyone I spoke to in the theater about that song. But it's just, it doesn't have the grandeur or the cultural impact or the scope. And this is always the struggle, is balancing big songs that people know with the, you know, lovely John Batiste performance too. And of course, the Killers of the Flower Moon song, which represents that movie well. And I was so glad it got to have a moment, because that was the only moment it got. So that was, in retrospect, a real relief that that nomination came through. So it's tricky. But, you know, when you see something like The Fire Inside and it's this very short performance that doesn't really land. And so that's where I kind of got that feeling of like, but that happens every year and there's really no way to avoid it.
I loved the actor presentation, but the first one, when it started, I was like, oh man, the show's going to be 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I was just, it kept moving. And, you know, we even had time for an extended naked John Cena bit, which, you know, fine with that.
Which went pretty well. Like, I feel like Kimmel's bits in years past have been a lot of the places where, like, okay, like, don't disrespect the movies. You know, like, where he, like, goes and, like, surprises people in the movie theater. Like, they all felt really silly. And obviously John Cena being naked was really silly, but they just sold it really well, I think. And John Cena is really good at that kind of comedy. And then he was, like, clothed to actually announce Holly Waddington's name, so it wasn't so distracting.
Yeah, he had, like, smart. Scarlett O'Hara curtains on, you know. I think that the success of the Cena bit, which I was rolling my eyes at when it started, but they sold it with the punchline. Cena timed it perfectly with the pause at center stage, and then costumes are important. Like, when you realize, oh, that's the award he's presenting, like, it really, it just, like, they found the right rhythm for it. And I thought that was true of a lot of, you know, the Kimmel parts and the comedic bits of the show. I maybe wanted one more thing. I think maybe John Mulaney provided that when he presented. But, you know, that sort of like repeating comic tone, I wanted just a little bit more of, I guess.
But then don't discount Steven Spielberg, the king of the reaction
that
shots
good,
for America Ferrera and Kate McKinnon. It was so funny. And, like, shouldn't really, like, dinosaurs being real is not really that, like, funny or fresh a joke, but he nailed it. And Michael Keaton, too, in his reaction shot.
Yeah, the DeVito Schwarzenegger stuff. I mean, thinking that Jurassic Park movies are documentaries is good. That's a good bit, you know? I like that. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that, like, I was texting our friend and colleague, Joe Reed, and I was like, they should just kidnap John Mulaney and make him host next year. Like, he probably doesn't want to do it, but like...
I bet he does.
He
did the Governor's Awards this year, and he was so good. He killed.
That's true. Yeah, so maybe...
He knows the movies, and it makes a huge difference. Every joke he made at that show, it was so specific, and it killed in the room. And then if you get it, if you know the movies, which you should if you're watching, then it just... It works beautifully. He's great at it.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to kick Kimmel to the curb because, I think he's done a really good job. And, you know, he comes with his team of writers. He knows how to do the job really well. But I think when he's ready, if he's ready, like, John Mulaney does feel like he's been, like, literally, like, groomed to take over the job. And I think he'd be great at it.
Or just add, you know, 7 minutes to the show and Mulaney comes out midway through and just does a set about the year's
movies.
Does
another monologue.
Yeah.
Round two of the monologue.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
So we talked about the actress presentation to Dave and Joy Randolph and that kind of emotional high moment of the show. I really thought that we're going to have more crying, but it was a long while before anybody cried again after Davine. But like everyone who was presented to cried, which I loved, like Emily Blunt, like getting emotional. I think it was Mary Steenburgen.
Mary Steenburgen. So good.
It was so good. And the supporting actors, I think, were like less emotional, as you might have guessed. But Christoph Waltz talking to Ryan Gosling was perfect, weirdly. Yeah, I just thought those were such a runaway hit and maybe better than they were in 2009. I don't know why, but it felt like it went over much better.
Yeah, I would agree. It did feel better than I don't know why either, but it did feel maybe cleaner.
Yeah.
I wonder how they decide to pair those up, right? If they say, oh, you're presenting, who do you want to present to?
I mean, my pitch was for Shirley MacLaine to do Annette Bening's and like, I guess, logistics.
But she did it last time.
Shirley MacLaine did it last time too.
Yeah, she did the 2008 one, I think.
Wow. Okay. All right. So Shirley.
2009, yeah.
You get to take off. But Charlize Theron doing an epic was also pretty good. To go in order through the night, because the supporting actress opened it, but then they saved supporting actor for later. Robert Downey Jr., I get the impulse. But the screenplays were pretty shortly thereafter. And Cord Jefferson has been so smart and had so many like great broader talking points throughout the season. And he, you know, has talked about that idea of risk taking in Hollywood. And I thought he condensed it into his speech so well. Like it was really rousing and thoughtful, but still fit into a speech. Richard Gawker taught you, both of you guys, all of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Efficiency of economy of words and all that stuff. Yeah, he was good. And I think it was, you know, there was a question about how political people would be at the Oscars this year. You know, obviously Jonathan Glazer was, and other people kind of made reference, Cillian Murphy. But Cords was political in a way, but it was more industry facing, you know, and I think that it was the right kind of sentiment without sounding kind of undermining at a show that was so dominated by Barbie and Oppenheimer, you know, to say like, if you're, what about making 10, $20 million movies or, you know, whatever, you know, he did the math basically, you know, if you have a $200 million budget, how many smaller movies could you make? Like, I think that the message was not pointed at those two blockbusters, certainly, but like referencing the industry's tendencies, you know, and I thought, I thought it fit well within the narrative of that movie, obviously, but also of the evening.
I think it was pointed at Madame Web, the Night's Biggest Loser.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought the Madame Web joke in the opening monologue was really not so bad, but everyone did seem ready to move on from
John Mulaney. The way he brought that trailer line in was fabulous.
Yeah. It was really funny. How about Justin Triet and Arthur Harari, the winners for Anatomy of a Fall, while we're sticking with screenplays?
Yeah, they were lovely. And you know, that at that point, I was like, my sort of burbling theory that Hewlett could win, I was like, oh, people seem pretty into this. Like, maybe that'll happen. Yep. But I think that movie, which was really beloved, obviously reflected in its nominations, like, that's a great award for it to win, you know, in that it was such a, it's such a wordy movie, and it further inches the Academy closer to really bringing in international stuff into the main fold of nominations. I mean, obviously, Almodovar has won before, but like, yeah, I think it was exciting for them and for that movie, but also for the Academy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, this was a year where again you really saw the international pull that has taken place the last few years within the Academy. Like, to me, the most thrilling win of the night was The Zone of Interest winning Best Sound. I mean, that was such a testament, number one, to like how deserved it was, because that is such a difficult win when they like to vote for cars and explosions and planes and all the usual things almost every year. But also just the fact that that movie was as strong as it was at all, you know, it wouldn't, in a normal year, a few years ago, be anywhere near the Best Sound category. And the fact that they were able to get it in and then have this really canny campaign that was very centered on that part of the movie, because it was really the only chance it had to win something other than international feature, It got through. And there were a lot of examples throughout the night of seeing the international impact. You know, the Boy and the Heron beating Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Godzilla winning visual effects. Yeah. Like all these little things that add up to a really diverse Oscars along those lines in a really exciting way.
And yet they couldn't have helped my ballot by giving it to Knight of Fortune in live short. Well,
oh,
I guess there are limits to this.
It was Guy Lodge who tweeted that between Zone of Interest, Anatomy of a Fall, The Boy and the Heron, 20 Days of Mary Paul, and Godzilla Minus One, it must be the all-time record number of non-English language films to win. I haven't seen anyone confirm it, but that just feels right. Like that
feels right to me.
That's really remarkable. Also, David, will you talk about the Godzilla crew on the red carpet while we're talking about international winners, that they were the stars of the red carpet?
I want to say I saw them. They kept going back and forth because truly everybody wanted to take selfies with them. And they all, when I saw the shoes and just how elaborate the design was of their red carpet looks, it was pretty, it was just very whimsical. They were so happy to be there. It's one of those real underdog stories. Again, I don't think anyone saw that movie coming as an Oscar contender, even when it became a hit here. But it's something that the visual effects branch really went for. And God, they were fun. They were posing by the Oscar. They really manifested that win from what I saw. Because there's, you know, the big, tall Oscar you take a picture with on the red carpet. Yeah, loved them.
I think it was also yet another nice reminder that, like, those below-the-line technical categories, you know, often treated by myself or casual Oscar viewers as sort of the flyover categories, it really means a great deal. You know, it's a big deal. And you know, the added value that, like, that one of the winners was the director of the film, you know, just kind of made it all the more exciting. But, you know, as you've said over the years, Katie, that, like, those are always the most fun people at our party because they're just, like, over the moon. So it was nice to see that on stage, too.
Yeah. Also, the Last Repair Shop crew had a great dance party at the party.
Oh, fun.
I don't want to jump ahead to the party yet, but did you guys see any Godzillas plus Oscars being juggled in the party when you got there?
Definitely didn't see them being juggled. I don't know if I saw Godzilla.
Being literally juggled. Though, like, when they were on stage, they had the Godzillas in one hand and the Oscars in another.
Yes,
and then the director's
right.
trying to give a speech. It's like, oh, you're out of hands. Like, what are you guys going to do about this?
Also, did they lose any along the way? Because the going from party to party, keeping all your stuff with you.
Hopefully they lost a Godzilla and not an Oscar. I feel like that's a decent trade to make.
Katie, you mentioned, like, stats. An interesting stat was that Robert Downey Jr. became the first ever SNL cast member to win an Oscar.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That which is actually pretty bananas.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
That's wild.
Yeah. Also partly because people forget that he was on the show. He was on it for, like, one season back in the day. But yeah, I mean, we all knew that win was coming. I thought the speech was appropriate, you know, like the kind of expected sort of Downey-ish, you know, rakish, whatever. I mean, starting off his speech with, I want to thank my miserable childhood or whatever the adjective he used was
you
know,
like
bracing.
That's like the subtext of so many Oscar speeches that nobody ever says out loud.
Yeah, yeah, you know. But I thought the stuff he said about his wife, about how he was this kind of, like, feral stray that she loved back to life, you know, I thought that was sweet. You know, that was, you know, the kind of career capping Oscar, not that his career is over by any means, but, like, that can also be as kind of satisfying in a way as, you know, the newbie getting on the stage.
Yeah. I tweeted this and stole it again from our friend Joe Reed. But the idea that Robert Downey Jr. and Christopher Nolan, who had, like, the twin movies of the summer of 2008, that was like, this is the future. This is what superhero movies are going to be, everything. And that they then won Oscars together for the same movie is just kind of a mind-bending thing of how time can change everything.
I know.
Yeah.
It was a good triumph. Who presented to Downey in that?
Sam Rockwell.
Oh, right, because of Iron Man 2, of course.
And he gave that kind of, you know, he gave Downey back to Downey. You know, it was sort of like snarky and jokey.
Vibe, it's vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, similar to Nicolas Cage.
Oh, my God. Nicolas Cage was so fantastic.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it was perfectly timed too, because there was just, you were like, this, we could use a little less earnestness in one of these. And then he just killed it. He met the assignment.
Yeah, and Giamatti seemed, like, so thrilled by being in that moment too.
Who said to Nyad that, like, I've never been stung by a jellyfish, but watching the film I felt like I had? Was it Charlize Theron?
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, that's good. That's funny.
It made me realize that between that and 7 Pounds, remember 7 Pounds?
Sure.
Everyone remembers 7 Pounds. A jellyfish on screen have had a rough go of that. I mean, we haven't talked much about Oppenheimer, really, just kind of obliquely, but we're kind of, as we move into the back half of the night, that was when it started just winning everything except for that sound award that you mentioned, David. It only won 7 Oscars, so it ties with Everything Everywhere All at Once for a sweep. Not exactly the kind of giant sweep that some of us thought it would. Really just did come down to that sound award. I love seeing Jennifer Lame. I'm still aiming for her to be my friend in the future.
We all are. Yeah. We're going to make it happen.
What else stood out for us with those Oppenheimer wins?
I mean, the amount of standing ovations and whatnot, it's just like, not that we needed any confirmation of this, but boy, does that town really like that movie, you know?
Yeah.
And this sounds crazy maybe, but I was really wired after the show last night. You know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to fall asleep. So I started rewatching Oppenheimer because it had been a while since I've seen it. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's right. Like, there's so much going on in this. And like, Cillian Murphy really is so good. And it's just such a complete vision. And yeah, Jennifer Lame really earned that Oscar, yeah. I will say.
Still with us somehow.
Yeah. Young, so spry. And, you know.
She's also, I mean, she's so nonchalant about it, to be honest, because she came back. I was in the press room. So when winners would come back, people peppered them with questions. And she just seems like editing is so easy the way she talks about it. She's like, well, I can't talk. I'm not good at talking about editing, but you know, the whole thing was a challenge. I was just impressed with how nonchalant she was about the massive endeavor that she took on.
That's probably the attitude you need just to survive it. You know, I also love that for the rest of her life, she will have the memory of Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger giving her her Oscar.
Amazing.
Amazing.
I mean, I feel like, Hoyte van Hoytema finally wins an Oscar, which we were all very excited about. And he and Ludwig Göransson all kind of seem to have the it's all in the job. Like, we just got out there to do what we were supposed to do, which is an incredible thing for what they accomplished.
And for Ludwig to have his siblings, Billie Eilish and Phineas, there at the show with him. I thought that was really nice. Sorry to steal
special.
My own live blog joke, but
thank God he got enough tickets.
Right, exactly.
You had mentioned, Katie, that it was interesting how long it took for Oppenheimer to win anything on the show, which I found a kind of a relief. It gave a lot of movies their moment before the wave came in. And I think they were also aided by the fact that it lost a few categories that it could have won. Even screenplay was, I think, in play. But yeah, I appreciated that. And it felt appropriate that the deeper we got into the night, the more Oppenheimer won. And I'm always just glad when the Academy is a bit more varied and discerning in terms of what they honor. And they don't do a full sweep because nobody wants to watch that. People want to see different movies win, especially in such a strong year. And there were a lot of different kinds of craft to recognize. And I was really glad that they did, even if Oppenheimer had, this like heroic editing, best cinematographer working right now, finally getting honored. Like, these are things that needed to happen and should have happened. But it was good for both the show and I think for the awards themselves that it wasn't a full-on sweep.
Yeah, looking at the order, I think I'm going to get this wrong, but there was the Poor Things sweep, which also everyone should look at what our story on what you didn't see on TV, because Natalie Jarvie was in the lobby bar watching Emma Stone, watching all of this happen from the screens. Like, she was just happened to not be in the auditorium when Poor Things won all of those. So those photos are very entertaining.
That was Joy Press, I believe.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It was Joy.
No, yes. You're fine.
Everyone was sending me excellent pictures all night. And then Nolan and Murphy won back-to-back. But other than that, like, every category was a different. It didn't feel like there was just one thing steamrolling on the competition.
There is a video of Emma Stone stopping a conversation and then running towards the auditorium because she's like, it was when they won for hair and makeup. And she's like, she's on stage right now and I'm not there, you know. And I thought that was sweet.
Yeah. Nadia Stacey, who won, was one of the Poor Things makeup people, has worked with Emma Stone a long time. So I feel like that was a really great moment for them. I want to get to the presentation of Best Picture, but we should talk about the shorts since we spent so much time talking about them.
Yeah.
Personally, I got all my shorts predictions right, which never happens.
I did too, so. In the end.
Yeah.
I did too.
Letter to a Pig was left by the wayside.
It was.
I went with Knight of Fortune, and that was my fatal error, is that I thought that maybe justice would prevail in that category.
I think Henry Sugar is probably the best live action short winner we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I found that to be I predicted Henry Sugar because I personally felt like that was the fullest movie. And I felt like, yeah, there's a chance that they will not go for this because it doesn't have the weight and issue-driven qualities that they typically go for here. But it's a Wes Anderson short that's very intricately, thoroughly constructed and designed. And it was just kind of in a league of its own, even if I really like Night of Fortune. So I was glad I stuck with it because I did almost switch to, what was it called? Red, White, and Blue.
And after all these years, it was so great to see Wes on stage having his big moment. You know, just that was really gratifying.
What else a bummer was that he wasn't doing? There.
He's prepping a movie in Germany, according to his statement that he put out on Monday morning. I was bummed by that, too. People are going to forget that Wes Anderson has an Oscar.
Yeah.
And Netflix's only win, which maybe we should talk about.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the Maestro train didn't really go anywhere in the end. I guess it's Maestro didn't win anything. Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win anything. Past Lives didn't win anything, but it was only up for two. Any other big total whiff?
The jellyfish didn't win.
The jellyfish. Diane and I will not let those jellyfish win. I think every other Best Picture nominee won something. So.
Yeah, American Fiction, of course, won screenplay, mm-hmm. as did Anatomy of Fall. We mentioned Zone of Interest.
Yeah. Barbie got its song. Holdovers got Dateline.
So, yeah, it was just those three.
Yeah. So our understanding, David, you had to leave the Oscars right before Best Picture was announced. But for our colleagues who are still in the auditorium, they didn't know that Oppenheimer had won Best Picture until people started to stand up. Because Al Pacino, does anyone think they know what Al Pacino did say?
No, everyone I know who was still in there was texting, confused, until it was clear what was going on. I was absolutely baffled in my Uber heading to our party because I had to make our live stream for the immediate post-show moment, and it really was what a way to go out. What a way to mark one of the most inevitable Best Picture winners by just being like,
I see this here. It was very different from the Moonlight thing, only because I had been there for that one, and like I said, the people that produced the show were instantly on stage when that was flubbed, and when Al delivered, they sort of instantly let the music swell. So it was like there was no error. It was just odd. It was the right name to say in an interesting way.
I think he said, "My eyes see Oppenheimer." That is my best guess.
Yeah, it was either that or I thought he said, "Like I see Oppenheimer here."
Yeah. He didn't say the names of all the nominees, which I think for song they did also because they had already, presented all of them. But I think that also is what threw people off.
Yeah.
I mean, Christine Bichon said she would have liked to have been mentioned on Twitter.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, for the good of all, they don't put all the nominees on that card that's in the envelope. So when the minute he said the name of a movie, it was like, okay, that's what won.
That's
true. But I think I said on our live blog, there's a certain art to giving out Best Picture. It's usually a sort of elder statesperson. No one will ever top, Jane Fonda taking a little pause and saying Parasite. But you know what? Pacino did it in his own memorable way. It's a shame that the other nominees were not named. But other than that, I kind of liked a little bit of the chaos of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had said that I hope they would bring out Michael Caine or Morgan Freeman to give Nolan his Best Picture Oscar. Oh, yeah. But Pacino, Star of Insomnia, was still a good choice.
And they made the very on-the-nose choice of having Spielberg give it to Nolan.
I loved that. I did.
That and felt very appropriate.
Our colleague Anthony was at rehearsals on Saturday and had this great bit that he put in our live blog about how at rehearsals they have you open the envelope and say a name so that the camera crew can practice. And they put in the names of real nominees, but it's randomized. It's not the real ones. But Spielberg gets the envelope and he's supposed to say Nolan. That was the randomized name in there. And he says, "I can't do this. It's bad luck. It's going to be a jinx." So he compromised and said, "Sidney Lumet for Network."
Amazing.
So he wouldn't jinx Christopher Nolan. Who else could they have had do it?
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Well, David, you mentioned being in the Uber on the way to our party. So, Kara, you got there eventually after you were freed from the press room. So, guys, what was going on inside the Oscar party this year?
Where to begin? I want Kara to talk about it first. This is your first first party as a guest.
Yes, it was. I had attended as another, an interloping journalist. I think it was when I was freelancing for New York Magazine. And so back in the day, if you were not a Vanity Fair staff member and came in as a journalist, you were only allowed to be in the party for 1 hour.
Yep. I think that's still the rule as far as I know.
No, they've relaxed it. According to our fellow journal friends in the room,
they were there for a while.
Congrats,
no more
everybody.
Time limit. But it's as someone when you're reporting and you only have an hour, the Vanity Fair Oscar party is as build. It is just one of the more star-studded rooms I have ever been in. That was true then, and it was very true last night. It is an incredible time to walk around that space and see the different various clusters of famous people from all different areas of, you know, public life. There were beautiful famous athletes. There were musicians. I mean, it's just so delightful to see so many people at once. And also that, you know, people are not just taking selfies the whole time, because it's some industry events. I mean, I think that's the directive given at the party, but it's so great that people are just enjoying their time and not sort of being bombarded with cameras.
Yeah.
There are plenty of photos being taken there, rest assured.
Exactly. Professional, beautiful photos.
But yeah, I got there early and you just sort of see these clusters forming when you're there at the beginning. The way I put it was like, there are 20 different groupings here that 20 different people in my life will go absolutely insane for that other 19 people won't really care about. Because it's just all of these really bizarre, specific niches that all come together. So like as I was ordering a drink, there's Kaia Gerber and Ziwei and a certain kind of, you know, person, celebrity, ordering next to me. Then I turn to the corner and there's like Kris Jenner embracing Quinta Brunson. And Serena Williams was being followed around a lot because she was an early arrival who was like, and a lot of people were understandably very drawn to her. So it's just kind of trying to get your bearings. And then at a certain point, you truly are walking by an insanely famous person every 5 seconds that you just kind of forget who's even there, because it is quite overwhelming. But I would say among us, the person who was being professionally chased after the most was Lindsay Lohan.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She did look great. I saw her
she
in
did,
our party
and she was
photos.
Having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking through our gallery, just talking about the pairings, which I do feel like that's the real appeal of the party. I've got Usher and Matthew McConaughey deep in conversation.
I saw that. Yeah.
He's wearing like an open jacket. Like, I don't know how much chest he was showing. I can't tell from this. And then there's a taking a selfie together is Rita Moreno and Lenny Kravitz.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, Rita, I'm friendly-ish with just of interviewing her many times over the years. She was sort of sitting at the beginning space when you walked in. She was sitting on the couches and she said she was delighted because she didn't have to. I mean, she's 92, 93. She was just sitting there and people would come up to say hi to her. And she was so delighted that, you know, obviously she's not going to be making the rounds. And I think Steven Spielberg sat down with her for a while too. So they were a great opener for people coming in. I also, Matt Damon requested a selfie with Flava Flav, which I thought was excellent.
He was another hot ticket, Flavor Flav.
That's just, yeah. Oh my gosh. Watching Flavor Flav walk around the room, like the energy is so fun that people are just delighted to see him. You know, more, it's like some people there's obvious reverence for, plenty of the Oscar winners, plenty of the uber famouses, but Flavor Flav is the kind of celebrity that just you want to be at a party and everyone's so happy to see him.
The person who walked around with the Oscar the most was Tarn Willers. Who was the Oscar winner for The Zone of Interest. Mm-hmm. He's a sound engineer. I think I saw him make about 20 laps. He was having the night of his life. He was there for hours. Everyone wanted a piece of that Oscar. It was just, and that, those are also some of my favorite moments is you have all these big stars and then you have, you know, craft people who people don't recognize walking around with an Oscar. And so they too get their moment. Everyone wins.
Did you get to hold his Oscar?
No, I didn't.
Oh, did you hold any Oscars?
I've done it. I've held Oscars at the party before, but this year I did not. No.
I briefly handed Ben, the director of The Last Repair Shop, to a couple of our colleagues because they had never been around one. But The Last Repair Shop crew was so fun. They were dancing later in the night.
I was going to ask who dominated the dance floor because I do think it varies every year.
Yeah.
It was a little quieter this year, I thought.
Yeah, they were. It would be, you know, certain songs would bring people out. But definitely toward the end of the night, it was Last Repair Shop as a group.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who else I saw.
Everyone there was too scared to dance because they'd seen the Ken performance and didn't want to pale in comparison.
I mean, I was really hoping that the full army of Kens would be invited to the party, but like all of them in their black cowboy hats. But, you know, space constraints being what they are, it's a little bit difficult.
I think they were probably at parties a little further down Santa Monica, if you get my drift.
Ooh, excellent.
Those who know, know.
I do see a photo of Paul Giamatti holding an In-N-Out burger at our party. So the prophecy is fulfilled, even if he didn't wind up winning the Oscar. I'm glad to see that
success
happen.
Success.
I guess Cillian Murphy went home. I don't see him in our pictures. And he is famously a nice man who wants to stay home. So maybe he got to do just that.
That's so funny. I will say, again, one nice moment in the press room. What's wonderful about the Oscars press room is it's gigantic. And there, I would imagine there's probably hundreds of journalists in there. And it's a very international group of journalists. So one of the things that's sort of lovely, when someone from not the United States wins, often there's a reporter from their home country who gets to ask a question, which is just so lovely. It's nice touch. And so last night when Cillian came in, two of the people who asked questions were from Ireland. One was actually... I think he said to him that it was a virtual question. So he's like, I'm at a rooftop bar. We're so excited for you. But it was just that Cillian like brightened up. I mean, obviously he was happy, but it was just such a lovely touch for two of his countrymen to be like, can we talk about you? Like, how do you feel? And it just, he had just such a sweet little smile. And those were really great moments.
I believe he's only the fourth Irish actor to ever win an Oscar.
Wow.
And the first Irish born actor to win Best Actor. He's the first.
Yeah, right. I saw that because Daniel Day-Lewis was born in England, even though he is both British and Irish. Yes.
Okay.
I am looking through, you know, how everyone changes clothes to come to our party, which is a tradition I love. And there's a gallery on the site with the best ones. But Colman Domingo, who was surprisingly understated at the Oscars, he wore black, which I just like did never expected. He's like the king of the bold colors. But he changed into a mesh shirt with like a like a chainmail coat. It's beautiful.
The coat was stunning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure in person it's the kind of thing that just like pops out in the room.
Mm-hmm. All those red and gold colors just beautifully reflecting off of it.
Yeah. So many people were in neutrals this year that I think our red decor really helped everybody pop.
It's funny how those things happen. Like, remember a few years ago, like a lot of the gowns were red and you were like, was this planned? And then this year it was a lot of neutrals. It's just funny how those.
Yeah.
I think it's an accident, but it happens nonetheless.
Once all those stylists talking to each other and they all get the group think. Well, that does it for the 2024 Oscars, I think. You know, we'll talk about this year in the context of future years plenty. I don't think we'll ever be done talking about Barbie and Oppenheimer. But all in all, I feel really happy. I think this was a good Oscars. It was a good season. A lot of really good people won, even if not all of the good people could win. I think everyone should have a lot to be proud of, right?
I agree. I also wanted to quickly shout out a listener who I met last night.
Mm.
Kate Schrader, thanks so much for saying hello. She has run marathons listening to Little Gold Men, everyone.
Wow.
I am very impressed with that achievement.
We joke about the season feeling like a marathon, but I don't think we ever hit that literally.
Right? I'm so impressed.
Well, thank you again to all of you for listening to us throughout the season. We will, of course, be back. We have Emmy season to talk about, as well as our annual tradition of predicting next year's Oscar winners. We'll be 100% correct this time. I can feel it. There is so much Oscar coverage to catch up with on VanityFair.com, including our live blog with basically everything, and then lots of galleries from the
from the party. Maybe you'll spot David and Kara in the background of them. So join us there. Find us on social media at VF Awards Insider and on our own. I am at Katie Rich and Richard.
Rylas.
And David.
David Canfield, 97.
And Kara.
Kara J. Warner.
Our editor and producer is Brett Fuchs.
And this week's award for the best description of modern Hollywood studios goes to Katie Rich.
They had the Godzillas in one hand and the Oscars in another.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.